This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, July 13th of 2022. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from an environmental attorney about what the Supreme Court's recent decision to limit the authority of the Environmental Protection Agency could mean for Colorado. Then, Mobile Home Park residents in Gunnison will share their stories of struggling with water shortages. As always on Wednesday morning, Chris Moore will share his commentary, Make Them Hear You. And then herbalist Brigitte Mars will bring us her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update is at the bottom of the hour. Then it's the Hightower Lowdown. In the first half of A Public Affair, youth radio volunteer Lily Noble interviews Lisa Lewis, author of the new book, The Sleep-Deprived Teen. Then at 9 a.m., the executive director of the Community Foundation of Boulder County will be in the studio to give a progress report on their Marshall Fire recovery efforts. Following that at 9:30, Doug Gertner will be in the Denver studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. All that's still ahead this morning, but first a look at the headlines with KGNU's Chiara De Mare.
The city of Boulder is seeking input from local business owners regarding a climate tax. Local businesses already contribute around $4 million a year to climate and sustainability programs, but a portion of the current tax is due to expire. The survey is open until at least July 26th, and the tax question may appear on the November ballot. The new tax could end up replacing the city's climate action plan and utility occupation taxes. The proposed would be collected on the business's Excel energy bill and would raise the annual funding for climate programs to $8 million. The Colorado Association of Realtors released statistics about the housing market that took place last month. KGNU's Christian Garibay has more.
Colorado housing prices have continued to rise this summer despite cutthroat competition between buyers, an increase in inventory, high gas prices, high interest rates, and a flood of new properties on the market. The number of single-family and condo listings across the Denver area rose almost 50% in 1 month between May and June of this year. Across the state, the number of single-family homes for sale rose even more between May and June, close to 52%. Douglas County realtor Cooper Thayer said the market this year looks vastly different from last year, with inventory doubling and on average lasting nearly a week longer on the market. With the increase in options, realtors across the state recommend that buyers be smart about looking for homes and try to consider variables such as gas prices, interest rates, and even summer traveling. For KGNU, I'm Christian Garibay.
The Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment is updating the data dashboard. Starting today, the COVID-19 data model will now look like the models of other respiratory pathogens. According to a CDPHE press release, respiratory pathogens like influenza require reporting and investigation of outbreaks in congregated living settings where the risk of transmission and more severe outcomes can be higher than the general population. Later today, the Colorado Air Quality Control Commission will host two public hearings over the Suncor permit draft that will focus on reducing air pollution in Commerce City. The draft proposal includes new monitoring, testing, record-keeping, and reporting. The first hearing of the day will be from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., and the second will be from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. The hearings are open to the public via Zoom. Links are available at the CDHPE website. Colorado Governor Jared Polis was in Southwest Colorado on Tuesday. Rocky Mountain Community Radio's Lucas Brady Woods reports his visit, including a meeting with RICO's volunteer fire department.
Governor Polis says the backbone of fire protection in Colorado is its volunteer fire departments.
They cover the vast majority of the area of our state, and in this hotter, drier climate that the American West and Colorado faces, we really need to rethink ways that we can more adequately support the resources we need.
At Tuesday's meeting, officials from RICO's volunteer fire department told the governor that their biggest need is funding for a new firehouse and equipment. Fire Chief Todd Jones says some of the department's gear is more than 30 years old, including at least one of their fire trucks. He also says they don't have enough room in the current firehouse to store it all. Here's Polis again.
We'll be happy to work with you on figuring out how to finance the new facility for sure, because you're not alone in facing this.
Another problem facing the RICO Fire Department is personnel retention. Chief Jones told the governor that incentives like higher pensions would help. Support for first responders was also discussed, including for paramedics and search and rescue workers. Other than his stop in RICO, Polis also planned stops in Norwood and Silverton on Tuesday. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Lucas Brady Woods.
Boulder County Public Health has confirmed that mosquitoes caught in local traps have tested positive for the West Nile virus. Symptoms of the virus include extreme fatigue, head and body aches, skin rashes, and swollen lymph nodes. These generally appear 3 to 14 days after being bit by a mosquito that carries the virus. There is no cure or vaccine for the virus, and Boulder County Public Health urges residents to know the preventative steps, like the use of DEET-enhanced insect repellent, dressing in long sleeves and pants, avoiding the outdoors from dusk until dawn, and to drain standing water outside of your home. Boulder County's Resource Conservation Division will host workshops on how to start and maintain backyard composting. The first workshop is next Monday, the 18th, over Zoom from 6 to 8 p.m. The second will be in person on July 23rd from 10 a.m. to noon at the Boulder County Recycling Center's Education Room. More information is available at boco.org/compost workshops. It's another hot day across the Front Range today. Fort Collins has a high of 96 and a low of 57. Denver has a high of 98 and a low of 62. And in Boulder, there's a high of 94 and a low of 59. Outside the studio, it's 59 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Kiara DeMari.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The U.S. Supreme Court ruled this month to limit the Environmental Protection Agency's authority over greenhouse gas emissions. KGNU's Alexis Kenyon spoke with Catherine Merlin, an environmental lawyer for Colorado's Wild Earth Guardians, about what this decision means for Colorado's fossil fuel industry and the state's effort to regulate it.
Kate Merlin, thank you so much for talking with me today.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
So to start, give us a brief summary about the recent Supreme Court ruling. How does it limit the EPA's authority, and what kind of impact would this have?
Well, I think that the impact of this court's decision on EPA's ability to enact regulations on climate change is somewhat overblown. So this court ruling had to do with something called the Clean Power Rule. And the Clean Power Rule never went into effect. And so what the court did here is a lot like, you know, digging up a dead body in order to hang it again. It's really unprecedented for the court to maneuver like this. I think that's what's most disturbing about the ruling, is it's what it says about the court's very aggressive interpretation of the court's authority on political questions.
So the Clean Air Rule was an Obama-era policy, right?
Yes.
What was it in that rule that the Supreme Court decided to overturn?
Yeah, so the way that EPA regulates pollutants is to set emissions thresholds. And this Clean Power Rule, what it said was the way that the EPA would determine emissions limits is to look at the emissions that could be achieved by transitioning to renewable energy, and then use that to determine the level of emissions that it would accept from power utilities. And so what the Supreme Court really did was say that particular section 111 of the Clean Air Act, the definition of best system of emissions reductions, does not mean that you can consider shifting away from fossil fuels to reduce emissions.
Okay, so just to clarify, the best systems language, if it had been implemented, was trying to hold fossil fuel plants to renewable energy standards. So like telling a coal plant it should be reducing its greenhouse gas emissions to, say, like the levels of a wind farm. But But that was something the EPA and the Supreme Court had already eliminated from the policy, right? Years ago.
Right. The rule never actually went into effect. The Supreme Court said, no, actually, we're not going to let you simply get rid of this rule. We're worried you might bring it back in the future at some point under perhaps the Biden administration. So we are going to vacate your repeal. We're going to pretend like you never repealed it. And we're going to do that so that we can overturn it. And that's why I say, I think the best analogy here is to say that they dug up a dead body in order to hang it again. I think is the best way a layperson could understand it.
Why would they do this? I mean, is it sending a message to the EPA? And if so, what message is it sending to the EPA? Or I guess anyone who wants to eventually transition away from fossil fuels?
If I had to speculate, I would say the message that it sends is probably, look out, this court has an agenda, and this court is willing to overturn precedent, willing to take extraordinary measures in order to achieve the political results that it desires. When I was asked to do the interview, I was asked, you know, what effect does this have on Colorado? And I do think that's important to say, you know, in addition to the fact that, you know, this ruling really was a narrow ruling regarding the limits of authority under Section 111 of the Clean Air Act. And it really was limited to that. What is the authority of EPA under Section 111 of the Clean Air Act? The state of Colorado has obligations to reduce greenhouse gases under state law. We should be able to accomplish more on reducing sources of greenhouse gases and holding, you know, major industries and major polluters accountable. But we don't see enough of that here. And so I think the real message for listeners should be that the state can do more. The state should do more. This ruling does not affect the state's authority to address greenhouse gases within Colorado, to regulate the oil and gas industry, which is our main contributor to ozone, to regulate these impacts, to protect public health and the environment.
I mean, the state is already having problems getting Suncor to comply with permits set by the EPA. Do you think this will make it even harder to hold oil and gas polluters accountable?
No. Again, the Clean Power Plan never went into effect. And so there's nothing that has been put into effect that needs to be altered now at the state level to comply with this ruling. It's true that facilities like Suncor, a lot of what we're talking about are their Title V permits, their major source operations permits. We're talking about them because the state has failed to renew them for approximately the past decade. They're a major emitter of volatile organic compounds, which lead to the production of ozone. The EPA is about to downgrade Colorado again from serious to severe ozone non-attainment. If you look at CDPHE, they will say that cars are the largest contributor to our ozone issues. But if you add the three different types of emissions from the oil and gas industry, area sources, point sources, and tanks, it's 150%, so 1.5 times higher than the contributions from the cars that we have in the state. So they're telling us not to drive our cars in order to address ozone, but they're not doing their part to reduce oil and gas emissions. So when Colorado says that they're going to do something about climate change to reduce emissions, they are also simultaneously talking about increasing oil and gas production 30% over the next 10 years. It's one of the most frustrating things that here we have facilities like Suncor, which they are in violation. They're violating the letter of the law year after year, and nothing happens to them. Then you also have the agencies which are responsible for enforcing these laws, and they're violating the spirit of the law. You know, they're not actually doing their job to ensure that, you know, real emissions get reduced. It's a disturbing signal that these former directors all go work for industry, right? So it can be really frustrating.
Kate Merlin is an environmental lawyer for Colorado's Wild Earth Guardians, an environmental organization that works to protect the environment and public health. Kate, thank you so much for talking with me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for talking to me today. I appreciate you bringing awareness to this really important topic.
For KGNU, I'm Alexis Kenyon.
Residents of a mobile home park in Gunnison recently were without water for most of the day. People in the park have been speaking up for years about water shortages without result. Over the last year, a few Gunnison residents have been working on a new state initiative to address equity in water issues. Stephanie Malterich reports for KBUT's Headwater series.
Just off the highway, a few minutes north of Gunnison, is Country Meadows Mobile Home Park. The dusty dirt lot is made up of about 55 mobile homes nestled beneath a stand of cottonwood trees. Elizabeth McGee moved to the park last August, and it didn't take her long to learn that the water may or may not come out of the faucet depending on the day.
My sister that lives with my mom, she's like, yeah, we'll go with water forever. And I'm like, this is not okay.
This motivated McGee to join the nonprofit Organización de Nuevas Esperanzas, O-N-E, or ONE, which was formed last year by a group of residents in the mobile home park to voice their concerns about water and a long list of other problems.
And there's, I think, 20 trailers up here in front that went without water almost all day yesterday. It was on for a little while, and then it got turned off again.
McGee was recently elected as ONE's board president, and she says the nonprofit has helped residents connect with the county, lawyers, and advocacy groups to call attention to the park's owner, who rarely responded to their concerns. In 2020, they filed complaints with the Department of Local Affairs, but since the park sold in the spring, no one is sure if or when they'll see a resolution. Gunnison sits at the headwaters of the Colorado River. Accessing water to drink, shower, wash dishes, and do laundry is usually as simple as twisting a knob and letting water run from the tap. But a 2019 census study found 1 in 45 homes in Gunnison County has poor plumbing. Sonia Chavez is the general manager of the Upper Gunnison River Water Conservancy District. The organization started in 1959 to protect all water users in the Upper Gunnison River Basin. Chavez's job keeps her in the know about all things related to water, and sometimes what she learns is surprising.
And I know within my own local community, there are people who don't have access to good quality, clean water.
Chavez is part of a Colorado group that spent the last year discussing the many problems that come when people don't have access to water. The group is called the Water Equity Task Force, and it brought together 21 diverse people, including members of Colorado's federally recognized tribes and the Esequia community located in southeast Colorado.
Our conversations and our task, as dictated by the governor, was really to identify the ways in which the Colorado Water Conservation Board could ensure that they are having diversity, equity, and inclusion around conversations on water, and that we reach all the various populations.
The group's work helped to finally incorporate equity into the Colorado Water Plan. Some of the members of the task force had deep connections to water, but others were community members with specific areas of expertise, like Dr. Alina Luna, professor emeritus at Western Colorado University.
We need water to allow people not only to thrive, but also to be able to exist and survive.
Dr. Luna has years of experience working on equity. She chaired the university's Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, and Internationalization Committee and created a diversity-focused undergraduate minor. She didn't know much about water issues before sitting on the task force, but she thinks if people can understand the basis of equity, they can apply it to all water issues.
You know, people, I think, confuse equity with equality. Really, equity is about meeting people where they are, giving them what they need to be successful. Equality assumes that everybody needs the same thing to succeed.
Back at Country Meadows, I ask Elizabeth McGee if she considered herself an organizer or community activist before moving here.
No, ma'am. I used to be a very quiet, in my own little world type person. And then I moved out here and I was getting tired of all of us getting abused, you know, that. Because that's pretty much what's happening, is we're being abused.
No one in Country Meadows is sure what will happen with the new ownership, But McGee says she and members of One will continue to fight until they know every home in the park has a steady stream of water. For KBUT's Headwater series, I'm Stephanie Maltrich.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas how you can have your voice heard before Congress. Republicans hate the fact that large corporations are too woke, and First Amendment opponent Marco Rubio wants to shut up these companies that openly oppose Republican policies like anti-abortion laws, voter suppression policies, etc. And he has submitted Senate Bill 2829, Mind Your Own Business Act, to shut these companies up. Quote, many corporations have publicly opposed or spoken out on current political or social issues not specifically related to their business interests. Lately, almost always against Republicans or conservative side, Republicans derisively call this approach going woke. In 2021, for example, Atlanta-based companies Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, and Home Depot publicly opposed their home state Georgia's new voting and elections law, enacted by Republicans on a party-line vote. Dozens of other major corporations also publicly joined the chorus, including Amazon, Facebook, Ford, GM, JetBlue, Levi Strauss, Lyft, MasterCard, Microsoft, Netflix, PayPal, Peloton, Pinterest, Reddit, Starbucks, Target, Twitter, United Airlines, and Viacom CBS. The Mind Your Own Business Act would make it easier for shareholders to sue publicly traded companies, and especially their executives, for woke policies. Woke policies are defined by them as when a company takes an action related to laws about elections, religious freedom, abortion, or supports a, quote, divisive concept based on a list in former President Donald Trump's 2020 executive order on this subject. The burden of proof would actually be on the corporation to prove they are not being divisive, not on the shareholder plaintiff, and top executives could be made personally liable for the financial payouts to shareholders if they lose. And a corporation couldn't justify their decisions with ostensibly non-financial rationales, such as preserving or burnishing the company's public image. The bill attaches new requirements to, quote, fiduciary duty, which roughly requires that corporate directors and officers exercise appropriate judgment when making corporate decisions. Getting rich at the company's expense is a typical example of breaching fiduciary duty. Generally, having a fiduciary duty requires one to advance a company's interests, but what is and isn't in a company's interests isn't always clear. It's also generally been a matter left to the states to decide, and just one single conservative shareholder could sue a company, even if a majority of shareholders actually wanted those left-leaning public relations. This is not to be confused with another Senate bill also named Mind Your Own Business Act, Senate Bill 1444. That's Democratic legislation dealing with the collection of personal consumer information by companies, particularly tech companies. This one, though, awaits a potential vote in the Senate. Rubio's Senate Bill 2829, Mind Your Own Business Act. If you would like to comment about it, you can contact your senators. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars to talk about how we can take care of our throat chakra. This is associated with the color blue. This is our center of communication. So what can we do to take care of ourselves here? Well, I do think eating some blue foods are a great thing, and that includes blueberries and blue corn and maybe elderberries, plums, grapes, things like that. And I have had sore throats a few times in my life, and I found out that if I go outside and open my throat to the sun and direct some sunlight directly into my throat, it's super infection fighting, and it helps to clear up a sore throat. But I also want to mention that this is our center of communication, and are we able to speak our truth? We're going to do a lot better in life if we speak affirmatively and say things like, I am taking charge of my life and becoming better at math or housekeeping or organization, rather than I'm such a loser, I can't do it. So speaking affirmatively is a great thing we can do. And, you know, maybe using less profanity, I know that once in a while it has its place, but to speak in a way that is clear, conscious. I also find that singing is a great way to open this center. And singing might be something that you do with your friends. I love the idea of singing in rounds as a way of getting each other to harmonize. singing in rounds. Can do it with people of all ages. What fun. And what about the idea of chanting to, even like oming? I've been trying to start a movement where I'm encouraging people like om at 420 or 1111. It doesn't really matter when, but one breath for peace. So singing, chanting, what are some of the good herbs for our throat? Well, according to Asian medicine, our voice and our throat is governed by the kidneys. And so eating black-colored foods can help our throat. And for those of you who are performers and use your voice for your living, you might find that drinking a little honey and lemon and some hot water is a great way to sweeten your voice. And you can even remember the yoga pose, the lion's pose, really easy one where you take a deep breath and then exhale and you open your eyes really wide and open your throat really wide. This is a great way of increasing circulation to the throat center. You might also look into the yoga postures, neck rolls, or looking side to side. Always remember to have good posture. So there's a lot of things we can do to take care of our throat chakra, because using our voice is a wonderful way of communicating our truth. And remember to speak truth. Beauty and goodness are high ideals. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
That's all the time we have for today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Chiara De Mare, Christian Garibay, Alexis Kenyon, Stephanie Malterich, Maeve Conran, Chris Moore, and Brigitte Mars for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, you can give us a call at 303-447-9911. Stay tuned for the Hightower Lowdown, and then it's a public affair. But first, these messages from our underwriters.